Your home for sports on the radio. We are 95.3 The Score.
I hope you're ready. It's that time. Climb aboard, all aboard, for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
I got a bad feeling about this.
I can't take it anymore.
I am losing my mind.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
I know that, dude.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
Alex is sitting there saying, what the heck are they talking about?
I would have Mariota out at 3 in the morning drunk, pawning his Heisman Trophy to get into an illegal poker house.
And now, a guy with lots of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
No, I mean, like, lots of issues.
Shut up and get on with the program. Dude is a snot.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
Who is this?
It's Steve Tannen.
Have another donut, you fat pig. But all right. Getting the lead out. On a Friday, rocking into the 5 o'clock hour. Thanks for tuning in. In 1 hour, the Oregon women will begin their second-to-last series of the season, taking on California at Haas Pavilion in Berkeley. They've got the weekend off, meaning Saturday, Sunday. Maples Pavilion, Monday night, ESPN2, another national game against Stanford after they kicked the Cardinal rear end here on that infamous Thursday. The Oregon men last night fell into a hole, climbed out of it, tied the game, had the ball with a chance to take the lead, and just I just thought it was such an odd sequence. With Peyton Pritchard, beats his man off the dribble, makes a great move, driving hard to the bucket, and I don't have to tell you, he's a righty, and then he went to lay it in lefty and missed the whole rim. Then you had, I think it was Duarte, go to the foul line, missed the front end of a 1-on-1. And then the next thing you knew, it was a 6-point game again. And you're like, well, you guys, but then how'd that happen? It was a really fragmented, disjointed effort on behalf of, I'm going to say, both teams. Because if either team, especially in that second half, had some offensive consistency or was radar locked from the free throw line, might have been a different story. I mean, Arizona was 11 of 21 from the stripe. Oregon not much better at 12 of 19. But like I said, there was a lack of flow. I don't know. It's because both teams are pretty tenacious defensively. Although in the second half, when you look at how Oregon shot in the first half was a horror show. I mean, they were 2 of 11 from downtown, 10 of 27 overall for 37%. And in that first half, Arizona shot pretty well. I mean, both teams scored inside. It was about even, 30 to 28, I think. But, yeah, Oregon's turnovers, 16, led to way too many opportunities for the Sun Devils. And, you know, in a 5-point game, Arizona State had an 8-point edge on points off turnovers. And their bench, that Verge kid, contributed 26 points because they kept Remy Martin in check, although they did their best to knock him out of the game but with two inadvertent whacks to the face by Will Richardson. So, yeah, we'll run through the standings, what all that meant, what's on tap for tomorrow, and why it was not a good loss like any as you're vying for a conference regular season title in the latter part of February is, but it's not a deal breaker yet, but they have now backed themselves into a corner where they really need to win tomorrow at one of the most difficult venues in the country, much less the conference. All right. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Barry. Barry, good afternoon. How's it going?
Oh, it's going well, Steve. How are you?
All right, what's up?
Yesterday you were talking about movies that scared you when you were a kid.
Yeah.
For me, it was The Shining.
Oh.
Jack Nicholson beating down the bathroom wall with the axe.
Yeah, that's probably high on a lot of people's list, another Stephen King horror, and not many do nuts or scary better than Jack.
Yeah, he's done.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
The carryover call, you gotta love it.
Yeah.
Good luck in prison. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. So, last night's results in this conference, starting with, I don't know if I was going to describe Oregon's performance all over the place. So Colorado held off USC. Arizona smoked Oregon State. UCLA beat Utah on the road. So the Buffs are your new leaders, 10-4. Both Arizona schools are 9-4. And remember, they've already finished their territorial cup duet. ASU and Oregon have split. The Sun Devils lost their only game with Colorado. The Buffs and Ducks have split. But they also, Colorado, lost at McHale against Arizona. So the bottom line is, right now, Arizona could win out and grab the Pac-12 one seed, plus they would have the tiebreaker over Colorado. That was not the case heading into last night, but last night did in fact happen. No, it didn't. Yes, it did. No, it didn't. Yes, it did. I swear to God it did. And then to marinate, we get Oregon at McHale to play on a players program, the Cats. As far as their finishing schedule, Wildcats at the Southern California schools, home for the Washington schools. Colorado plays UCLA tomorrow. Then three on the road, at Cal, at Stanford, at Utah. Now you're thinking, well, those are three teams who are sub 500 in league, but going on the road in league this season, there's no reason to think anybody's going to win three in a row. There's only been one team win two in a row, and that was ASU in the Bay Area. So this thing remains nuts. It remains wide open. And if somehow Oregon could rally the troops, get it together, and knock off the Cats in Tucson, they would then be third heading down the stretch with three home games. And it really is advantageous to Oregon because their three home games are, first of all, the fact they haven't lost, yeah, that helps a little bit. And the fact that they're playing the Beavers, Bears, and Cardinal, an OSU team who's 2-5 on the road in conference. Cal is 1-5, Stanford is 2-5. So, and by the way, you would not assume that this team, who has been, like I said, all over the place, in particular offensively away from Matthew Knight Arena, you know, I haven't seen the number, probably hasn't been posted, but I would imagine Arizona probably be a 3-4 point favorite. But so last night, not good. But with the current Pac-12 landscape, a loss they could still recover from. But now you're asking to still have a shot at being a one seed in the regular season with five conference losses. That's not going to happen in any other league this year. So, like I said, if you look at the specifics, USC got back Okongwu last night, and he was a beast. 21 points, 5 boards, had 4 steals. But the Colorado offense clicked. They had 44 second-half points, 4 starters in double figures. Lucas Siewert off the pine. hit 3 of 5 from downtown, scored 11 points. Southern Cal hurt themselves, hit just 2-11 from three-point land. Huge all-around game for McKinley Wright, 15 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds. He had a beautiful clutch floater. So it comes down to 1 o'clock tomorrow. Breezley Bruins are at Boulder. That is going to be a CBS national game. All right. As far as what else is going on, because, yeah, we got things.
Have you read through the tie-breaking procedures in the Pac-12?
Yeah.
Did you actually read what Part B is for the tiebreaker? The second tiebreaker is in the Pac-12? Because I've tried
for a two-team or a multi-team tie?
For a two-team tie. Have you actually read the words that are on the Pac-12's website about the tie is?
It says, you know, the one-loss percentage versus the team occupying the highest position in the final regular standings, then going through until there's an advantage, and then B is results of head-to-head competition during the regular season, one-loss percentage against all Division I opponents, and D is a coin toss conducted by the commissioner or designee.
What is B? What is that the win-loss record compared to other teams, everybody else in the conference? But isn't that just their conference record versus the team that they're not tied with? I don't understand what that tiebreaker means in just like regular words. Because I think this is just, it got caught up in lawyer speak, and they had to put so many amendments in there that legally it made sense, but then when you try and read it, you fall asleep in the middle of it because you've read 19,000 words.
You get the glaze.
Yeah, and there's just so many commas.
So
I'm mostly concerned with part B of the two-team tiebreaker.
Yeah, and I don't know why they explained it like that, because first of all, if there's two teams, it's head-to-head.
Right.
And then it morphs into that. So I guess what they're saying here, well, actually, that's weird. Why is, I see where you're going now.
Because head-to-head during the regular season, okay, sure, that's it. That makes sense. And then I don't understand, and then I totally get part C, win-loss percentage against everybody else in the D1, and then D, it's a coin toss. That's very simple. That's really what the first tiebreaker should be, just get it out of the way, honestly, like just have a coin toss. But I don't understand why you need a paragraph to explain what you're trying to go to. If it's a tiebreaker, it should be something as simple as, like, you know, overall winning percentage, wins versus top 25 teams, or just something.
Yeah,
I don't know what these groups are.
Okay, so I think I've been assuming something forever, that let's say Oregon and Colorado end up 13-5, but if Oregon swept Colorado, they're the conference champs. But that's saying that's B.
No, because head-to-head is A.
Wait a minute. What are you looking at? Show me. Flip your screen.
I'm looking at the tiebreakers here.
Because I've got something different.
Oh, boy.
Where mine says, does yours specify two-team tie?
Yeah, tiebreakers for a two-team tie. Part A is results of head-to-head competition. Part B...
Look at how weird this is. That's B in the thing I printed out off of the Pac-12. So
you're A...
We're actually looking at two different explanations. And it's not like we're interpreting it wrong.
No.
There are two printouts that say something completely different. So now my answer to your question, now I got nothing.
Right. So what? Okay, so on your piece of paper, what is A? Because for this, that I'm reading
on
the internet, is B, which is the second
tiebreaker. I think mine is a mistake.
I think so.
Because it's head-to-head.
Right.
So then it would go, all right, so let's say again, let's use Oregon and Colorado. They're tied and they split.
Right.
So then I think they would say, all right, who's in third? How'd you do against Arizona? All right, you're still tied? All right, how'd you do against the fourth place team? Continuing down until somebody gains an advantage. Then if that's still tied, it looks like then they would go to one loss percentage against all Division I opponents.
Okay. That makes much. They should just use those words instead of the confusing words that they do have written down.
And by the way, a coin toss?
I mean, coin toss is a pretty just general, just okay, well, let's just get this over with. We can't come up with any more random, how did you do on Thursdays? Oh, how did you play on Fridays? Who played the most games on Saturdays? Then you get to that point.
And they don't fall down. That's just absolutely bonkers.
Just start with the coin toss. Just flip a coin.
I wanted to get to one more Waltonism. And I really try, if I'm talking about history and I'm being specific, obviously I'll use a name or cite an instance where I think most of the audience, especially the 40, 45 and under, might not get. But Walton drops references and names when he's just talking about a good rebounder or a good scorer. And I'm like, does he realize that, first of all, he's older than me, which means he was probably born in 1952, I would guess, right around then. So he's 8 years older than me. And he always references guys he played with, which, okay, Big Red, I get it, but you retired like 34 years ago. So last night when he said, oh, these guys, they got a rebound like Willis Reed, Elvin Hayes, and Wes Unseld. You, as a millennial, is there one name you recognize, and is the only reason you might recognize Willis Reed is because every time some guy plays injured in a big game, they bring up what he did in Game 7 of the 1970 NBA Finals. Would you have ever gotten who Wes Unseld and Elvin Hayes are?
No, probably not. Yeah.
And so when he says that, it's like, dude, look, I get it. I'm also older, and I'm also a basketball junkie, but I wonder how many people are out there like, who? How do I know that's a good rebounder?
That's the general experience of listening to Bill Walton call a basketball game.
He's in his own head.
What is he talking about right now? And you tend to zone him out. You kind of zone out the broadcaster. You're just watching the game as it's going along. Is he even saying the names of the players out there correctly? Not sure about that.
Or is he doing what I tried to do yesterday?
Right. Is he making up players' names? I don't really know. He might be. It's Bill Walton. And then he drops out there that someone is the fifth sweatiest person on to ever play basketball. And Dave Pasch throws out but who are the other top five? But he dropped himself and three other names. Bill Walton, by the way, the fourth sweatiest person ever.
And by the way, he also had his ASU at a critical moment as Oregon was coming back, just came down court and threw the ball away, and he called it the eighth worst possession in the history of Arizona State basketball.
That was something I absolutely love Caliendo doing, was Oregon had a couple turnovers, and he was dropping in and that's the seventh worst possession that Oregon's ever had in the history of college basketball. Because it's just a Waltonism, and it's funny. I enjoyed it.
There was a few years back when Jim Leland was still the coach of the Detroit Tigers, manager, and somebody was finding fault with Verlander when he was in his prime, and he said something along the lines of, man, you guys will find flaws with anybody, even Bo Derek. And his players were like, yeah, we don't know who that is. That's a terrible reference.
Bo Jackson? I mean, he's a good-looking guy. He's kind of older now, too, but I guess he's okay.
Trust me, Bo Derek was better-looking in 1978. So, you know, the point of reference always just... It kind of cracks me up. It also is like... Do a little prep work. If you wanted to, there probably aren't many people on the planet who could name drop NBA players from the 70s and 80s more than me. But, you know, if I'm appealing to people under the age of like 47, they're going to be like, I don't know why you keep referencing Bailey Howell. It's just the name means nothing to me.
Fake person. I think you should have gone fake person.
Fake person. You're making up fake people. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Ken. Ken, good afternoon. How's it going?
I'm great, Steve. Happy Friday.
Yeah, you too. What's up?
So, Bill Walton, so this conversation, it's the most random thing. So, last night, I'm watching the game, and you're talking about all the old references he always throws out from basketball lore and really basketball almanac.
Yeah.
The last night, he's talking about Peyton Pritchard. He brings up the name of Jimmer Fredette, right? Played for BYU. And then the third name he drops in there is this kid named Dantley Walker. And I instantly looked at my TV and my mouth fell open. And I said, what in the heck is Bill Walton doing talking about Dantley Walker? So I actually messaged Dantley, because this is a kid who was at high school at a really small school where I went to school in Nevada.
Really?
The all-time state leading scorer. I mean, dropped like 80-plus points in a game once, averaged 40, 50 points his senior year. Went to UNLV, some other schools. But this obscure name, and I was like, how does Bill Walton know who Dantley Walker is? So it's like, this guy doesn't cease to amaze me. I mean, I listen to him, and it's like a train wreck. You can't look away.
Oh, absolutely.
But last night, he blew me away, because I messaged this kid who's, you know, he's probably 26, 27, 28 now. He's an assistant coach at Chaminade. I'm like, Dantley, Bill Walton just talked about you. And I called my parents down in Nevada. I was like, my dad said, did you hear Bill Walton drop his name? And it's just the most random thing, but Bill Walton, as crazy as this guy is, he still gets me and still surprises me. So, hey, that's my claim for last night, and it was quite funny.
No, that's awesome. Thanks a lot, Ken. Yeah, and I guess in Walton's defense, because one of the things I do like on SportsCenter or some other broadcast, they'll just drop a name, and I know it's an insider thing. And for the people who get it, it's hysterical. It's like I said, we've got to be going back 12, 15 years when Damon Heward was the quarterback of the Chiefs, and Neil Everett on a Sunday is doing the Sports Center, and Chiefs playing the Raiders today. Damon Heward, they love him at Autzen Stadium, and then he just goes into it. And my buddy and I are like, 16 people who are watching this got that one right now, and not NFL fans, just people who happen to be either in Seattle or Eugene. And I'm like, okay, throw it out there, man. That's brilliant.
Neil Everett would anytime
They love him at Rennie's.
Yeah, they're digging it at Taylor's. Until Tuesday. They're digging it at Taylor's. They're loving it at Rennie's. That kind of, and yeah, it's like, okay, the five people
literally.
Who, like, yeah,
it'd be different if it was even a Portland bar. You know, a city of 2 million. It's Eugene. I love it. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in Pat. Pat, good afternoon. How's it going?
Okay, Bo Derek, the official 10.
Right. But I was going to say, but when Jim Leland made that reference, everybody in his locker room was like not born.
I get that. But at the same time, that's the thing about Walton, because most of the people, you know, anyone that's under 40, they just roll their eyes when he gets, because he gets on a roll.
Right.
And everything is never relevant to anything as, you know, maybe popular now, but it's relevant to maybe you and, you know, you and I.
No, it's relevant to him. We just happen to be in the way.
Well, and I get a kick out of him because, I mean, I don't always like his shenanigans, but he does say some relevant things. And there's a lot of times you'll say something, you kind of go, wow, that was pretty impressive. And he does get the game. I mean, he probably knows a lot more than most people want to give him credit for. But to me, I enjoy it just for what it is. And, you know, it's just, you know, he is who he is, and, you know, he's kind of an enigma, you know?
Yeah, no, so. I like Walton. I just felt like when Caliendo sat down and we got dueling Waltons, it was like, I was so ticked off I was out of vodka. It was unbelievable.
Oh, it was great. That was probably one of the funniest things I have heard. My wife doesn't, you know, she doesn't even know Frank Caliendo was. And she's like going, oh, this guy's got him right on, you know. And then when he started doing Charles Barkley, you know, and,
yep,
and he's got Barkley on, and then he throws in a little Shaq there for a second, and it was great. But, yeah, I know there's a lot of people that don't like Walton, but I remember when he played here, and I hated him back then, and then he became a Blazer, and then I loved him when he was a Blazer, and then I felt bad because he never could play for years, and I was glad that he got his moment when he played for The Boston.
Celtics, yeah.
So, I think that it is what it is. And he's had a lot of health issues and that a lot of people don't really realize. And, I mean, there was a point when he was in a wheelchair.
Yeah, he was in a wheelchair and he was depressed and suicidal. And for him to land where he is now, it's a great story. He's just so out there, but good for him.
Yeah, fantastic story. So, I enjoy, but I understand when people don't like him, but, I just get a chuckle out of it.
Right, thanks.
And one last thing, Steve. Yeah. See, he was born, I think, in 56.
But he graduated in 74, so the math's not right.
I thought he graduated in 74, really?
Yeah, I thought he was born in 52, which, because I know he was, he was on the 72 unbeaten team, 73 team, and 74, they lost in the Final Four to NC State. So
I was thinking he didn't start until 73.
No, he was a three-year starter, 72, 3, and 4.
Okay.
Have a good one. So I was right when I mentioned it earlier. I just assume back then everybody played till they was a senior. So they were 22. So if he graduated in 74, which that I did know, and lo and behold, November 5th, 1952. Count it. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a break. We'll be back with an update and more sports talk. 95.3 The Score.
Sports Talk, sponsored in part by Guarantee RV Supercenters, the first and only RV dealership to offer service 7 days a week. Big city selection and country savings. Visit them online at Guarantee.com.
I see Wilder winning by knockout. I see Fury not being right mentally as much as, he makes you think he's confident in the bravado, what I just finished saying. Going into the Lions Den and all that stuff. I believe that in reality, it doesn't mean that he's worried about the judges. He's worried about himself. He really has the best shot to go after him, catch him by surprise, catch him early.
Teddy Atlas, one of the premier boxing analysts in the world, talking about he's liking Deontay Wilder by KO. Versus Tyson Fury. The odds makers have it really tight. Not quite even. And one of the stupid sites I went to, it wouldn't normally, what I could do is take a step towards a bet, if that makes sense. And then, in essence, kind of explain what a $100 bet would pay off, what a $50 bet would pay off. So as far as who they've got as the favorite, by the way, pretty full card. So it looks like that's crazy. They got Wilder 1.7 to 1, Fury 2.6. So if you take Wilder and you bet 100, you get back 173. So, obviously, let's go to Tyson and the Fury. If you take Fury and you bet the same C note, you get 205.63. So, there you go. You could also get 17 to 1 on another draw. But I'm fourth. I'm back. And I absolutely don't know enough about each fighter. And, they have the undercard starting a few hours earlier. It's just, I would like to know when that fight is going to be. About 8 o'clock our time, because while it's been a while since I've had an interest in a heavyweight title fight, I'm going to be way more locked in on Oregon and Arizona. And I understand the whole split-screen mentality, but I don't know how thrilled I am with that concept. It's a big game for the Dukes. It's a Saturday. We're the voice of Oregon. We're going to be talking about that game for sure.
Well, you have, if you're going to pay for the fight and the fight's the big thing, I would assume you're going to put that on your TV. So you put that on while the preliminaries are going around, and there's probably going to be some downtime, some stalling here and there, depending on some other things that are going on. How long do the other fights go? Like,
the start times
for all of this are all so far up into the air.
For greedy reasons, you're going to want a lot of those preliminaries to go to the cards.
Oh, yeah, for sure. A lot of that. Maybe, you know, maybe somebody's overslept and they need an extra 30 minutes or something like that. If somebody got tired or, you know, somebody needs a haircut. Whatever's going on, you just need another 10-15 minute delay. But you can always have the preliminaries, you know, on the big screen on mute while you're on your laptop streaming the basketball game or your second device or whatever, and then that one's got the sound on. And then, you know, you're listening, you're paying attention, you're watching, you can catch some of the other fight. If you need to do a quick mute and an unmute on the TV and the laptop, that's pretty quick to do. You'll have your DVR feature as well. You can always just pause the fight. Record one, go back to the other. Who knows what's going on?
Yeah, a couple of you have brought up really good points. There's no way the main event, I mean, ever happens before 8. It's probably going to be closer to 9 o'clock on the West Coast. So, that's good advice. And I also appreciate the input.
Plus, the Ducks are going to win by 45. So, you know, you'll turn that game off anyway.
Wow. Talk about fantasy land. By the way, it's only the 6th time ever that the heavyweight championship bout will be between two unbeatens. And the first was what I consider still the fight of the century, March 8th, 1971, Ali Frazier. And the reason they were both unbeaten was because, obviously, Ali went to jail for a while, and then he also had his case go before the Supreme Court. And during that time, guys like Jimmy Ellis and Joe Frazier fought for his vacated title. So when Smoke and Joe fought the champ in 71, they were both unbeaten. Then when Tyson fought Tony Tucker, they were both unbeaten. Then when Tyson fought and could have gone like this against Michael Spinks in 88. Then there was Anthony Joshua defeated Joseph Parker in 2018, and Wilder Fury fight won the draw in 2018. So this will be the 6th time ever. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Yes, the man in the front row.
Oh, hello. So this is something that I was very briefly brought up to me the other night, and then it exploded on Twitter, and I think that's where my girlfriend saw it before she brought it up to me. But B.W. Carlin, at Bailey Carlin on Twitter, tweeted yesterday, and this is blown up, and now everybody's talking about it. What fruit or vegetable do you think you could throw the farthest?
And the avocado one?
Well, that was his answer, was the avocado. So he just threw it out there. There's no science behind it. I've seen a couple other people do some video testing of like how fast they've been able to throw some other fruits, but nobody's tested how far they could throw a fruit. But I'm just wondering, just your gut reaction, the fruit or vegetable you think you could throw the farthest.
You know, somebody brought up the apple, and I understood the slippage, but I thought...
I've never held on to a slippery apple.
Then I thought, because of the outer skin, man, an orange could go.
That was the first thing that popped in my mind.
That would be the way I would lean.
Because I think an orange, you could get an orange about the size of a baseball. They weigh about the same, too.
Yeah, I like the weight, too.
The weight, I think, is the key more than whatever.
The avocado theory was no good. The shape of it, I don't think it's aerodynamically as advantageous as a round orange.
Right, and this guy BW found, like, the most unripe avocado you've ever seen. It was, like, Kelly Green, but it was perfectly spherical, so I'd imagine that thing is about as dense as a hockey puck, and when you hurl it, yeah, you can get it going pretty far, but I don't know. There's something about that I don't really trust. I think with an orange, you get the right weight, you definitely get some good grip, and then you can just let it go. Other people said potatoes, but I think potatoes more
are
often...
Are they a little too heavy?
They might be.
And also, again, it's not round. That matters. That matters.
See, I think if you found like a tiny red, like a good-sized red potato, I think you could maybe be in that in the right range, but I think it might be too heavy. I don't know how that would affect your arm.
Somebody said a good fuzzy peach.
Oh, peaches!
You probably uncork one of those a long way.
Oh yeah.
Well, could you throw the smaller fruits? I mean, are we just now going to take a smaller plum and just uncork it? Because, like, here's my theory: there, you get the regular size football and the Duke, the smaller one. You could throw that a country mile.
Yeah, I don't.
We have to do this, by the way.
We're going to have to. Yeah, well, somebody's going to have to. I actually thought if the Emeralds wanted to do it, it sounds like a very fun, like, in-between innings promotion of, like, okay, you get three people who pick, like, their three different fruits, and then they're just standing, like, on a foul line, and they're trying to throw at the farthest, or who can hit Sluggo or the Sasquatch mascot or whatever, throwing their fruit the farthest or something like that. I don't know. I wouldn't go plum because there's a plum tree at my parents' house that I spent many a summer every like couple of days cleaning up the plums that have fallen off the tree. The plum is too soft. You wouldn't be able to actually get a good grip on it to be able to throw it because it would get all mushy in your hands. Same with a very ripe avocado. Being able to grab that, the meat of it's going to come right out
the top. I got to tell you right now, I may have changed my tune to peach.
Peach is good. I think that's a good answer.
It's in the neighborhood. Somebody said grapes. Nah, they won't go far.
Oh, no.
Not at all.
You
not
can't
at
throw
all.
A grape very far.
Not at all.
No.
I'm leaning orange, peach. The more orangish family, if you want to get into the details of the color of said fruit.
Maybe an apricot of some kind.
And by the
like
way,
that.
Now, of course, I'll end up going shopping this weekend. I'll be gripping it.
Oh, yeah.
And people, normally you'd think, are you looking to see if it's ripe? Now I want to see how far I can throw
it. Is this a good weight? I haven't held a baseball in a while. How much does a baseball weigh? I'm not really quite sure.
Oh, but how about this? Let's have, so how far you can throw it or how fast you can throw it.
See, fast is definitely where you start going with the smaller fruits because I think those are the ones that you can really just kind of whip
right,
in.
Right. You get the great pitching motion, and I could just see a plum going splat at 60 feet, 6 inches.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Even if you're just going for distance and speed, you get a little crow hop in there and you really get your weight behind it. Oh, yeah.
You're going to hurt
somebody if you hit them with a plum.
This is one of our idiotic digressions that I actually think could end up being really, really fun.
I think so, yeah.
All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I'm warming my arm up now. I got plans this weekend.
Just got a tweet from Pat Zajac who said he would go Mandarin Orange, and it's being brought up at the next M's promo meeting. I'm calling dibs on being one of the first people to try and throw
We will see you at PK Park in June.
I cannot wait. I will be there.
All right, that brings us to suddenly a much-needed break time. We'll be back with the tweet of the day and wrap up a week next. 95.3 The Score.
And now, it's the Coors Light refreshing tweet of the day.
They are trending, twittering, tweeting, you name it.
On Sports Talk with Steve Tannen.
LOL, laugh out loud, OMG, oh my God, WTF, why the face?
Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Hello, host Steve. Nick Rogers here at the Coors Light Frostbird Sports Desk for the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Coors Light is mountain cold refreshment that is made to chill. Going off of the fruit debate we were just having, at Mount Booble tweeted us in that a nice orange or avocado would certainly liven up the first ceremonial first pitch. Which I thought.
What is he doing?
I don't know.
No, I'm just saying. The look out there, the fans are like, is that a baseball?
I said baseball orange. What's going on here? And I really, you dipped an avocado in white paint and you put some really kind of like crappy red, like, the seams on it or whatever. You're like, hey, let's play some catch. I got a ball. It's right here. And you throw somebody an avocado. That just sounds like a disaster. It sounds like absolutely no fun at all.
When you're talking about guys like Pat, I mean, these are minor league people through and through.
Oh, yes.
They appreciate probably the opportunity to present something like this more than like 99.9% of sports fans.
Right.
And the M's are notorious. I shouldn't say notorious. That's a bad thing. They're famous for coming up with some of the best gimmicks to entertain people.
Right.
This is potential awesomeness, by the way.
This is fantastic. I'm very excited about this idea. And I've kind of like
I'm sadly excited.
I didn't know. Yeah, my girlfriend just brought this up one night, and I was just like, "Oh, an orange. It's about the whatever. Just move on." And then I saw the tweet, and I was reading people's replies. People were bringing up potatoes and onions, and like, how far could you throw an onion?
Boomeranging a plantain was suggested. I don't even know what to do with that.
No, that's even better than a banana, because I think a banana would very easily, if you tried to whip it, you've got the banana coming right out the peel. That's just going to be a disaster.
I'm not
right
on board with that.
No. Anyways, to the tweet of the day, we have a couple good ones from yesterday of people remembering Taylor's and some of their fond or not so fond memories that they may or may not have had at Taylor's over their time. Some of those were pretty good. Tweet of the day is a little tough today. There's definitely a lot going on. I'm going to make it pretty. Here we go. Our tweet of the day is from @Jeromney. He so far has been the only person that's actually filled out our quarterback carousel, which it's a game we didn't even play to get today, but it's out there.
But that's one of those things that's not going in.
Oh, no. Okay, we'll laminate it then. @Jeromney, he filled out our quarterback carousel musical chairs game. There's so many colors and lines and patterns on things that are going around from team to team. I think most of the players stayed with the team that they're on. I'm a little confused because I think he's got Dak Prescott going to 3 different teams, but that's okay. So thank you to @Jeromney for participating in some fun of the show that we put out there and that we're going to keep having fun with, and we always appreciate that. You can actually find that image to be able to edit and work on your own and submit @953thescore. On Twitter. We're also on Instagram and Facebook. You can follow us there. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Spotify and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm on Twitter @RickNodgers. Steve is on Twitter @SportsTalk953. Do not be a jerk. Just do it.
JDI. So somebody texted and said they heard earlier I was talking about some crazy comeback in college basketball last night. And it was one for the ages, maybe one for the Division I history books. Because Eastern Illinois, the Panthers, are taking on the Racers of Murray State. And like the SportsCenter guy said, only 6 teams in Division I history had ever come back from a 27-point lead in the second half. They were down 27, however, with 11 minutes and 40 seconds to go. 50-23, they were being doubled up. It would be the greatest comeback, as nobody did it with less time left. And you know how ESPN, in a game like that, they gave the Racers a 99.9% chance to win. They come back, they tie it, they've got possession with 0.4 seconds. Josiah Wallace splashes a 3. They end the game on a 40-10 run and win by 3. If you didn't see the end or the highlights, it is absolutely and completely and totally bonkers. You got to check it out. Eastern Illinois, Murray State. All right, 284-8571 to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline we go. Bring in Gary. Gary, good afternoon. How's it going?
Would a coconut be considered a fruit?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's my pick.
A coconut.
Oh, man, y'all got a coconut up.
All right. No, is that too big to get a grip on? Is that like trying
like
to throw
a
softball?
Piece of cake. You can throw it a mile.
I like coconut cake.
Well, if you want to throw one of those too, I'd encourage you. Hey, just a quick reminder here. Saturday will be the BYU-Gonzaga clash.
Oh, yeah, that's a big game, actually.
Pardon me?
That's a big game, actually.
It's going to be a huge game. That's why I'm calling to remind you. So we're here for to help out.
Yeah, and it's, you know, like I've been saying for months now, it's literally the last chance for Gonzaga to lose before the NCAA tournament, if you ask me.
Well, they've got the conference tournament they're going to play again, so they may have a second shot.
Yeah, I'm thinking on a neutral court, Gonzaga rocks them, maybe at Provo. But, yeah, that's 4 o'clock tomorrow, ESPN2.
Enjoy.
All right. Thanks a lot, Garrett. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Somebody is thinking nectarine. It's a lot of play on the orange family.
Nectarines, I think, are a stone fruit, so that's not necessarily they are orange in color, but I believe they have a pit, and that makes them a stone fruit. So they're more in the apricot or peach family, if you will. I also had a nectarine tree. I don't know how it happened, but when my parents bought the house that they had, or that they live in, there was a plum tree in the backyard, and in the front yard there was a nectarine tree. We also have a lime tree for some reason. I don't know who lived in the house before us. Apparently they loved fruits. I don't know why.
Well, because they're healthy and good for you, and if you grow them, you don't have to buy them. That seems like a logical answer.
Who likes limes that much? Like, they're not in season year-round. Like, I get harvesting them and using them for stuff. You can only make so many margaritas, and they're not good for key lime pies either. We tried.
Limes also are good if you're doing certain kinds of shrimp and rice dishes to kind of spritz on a little bit. The other games of note tomorrow, man, there's a real full schedule. First of all, the ESPN game to start the day, you got number 3 Kansas at number 1 Baylor. So that's a biggie. I mentioned Gonzaga. In the A-10, you got Duquesne, Dayton. Dayton's a really good team. The Oregon game is at 6 o'clock. And that is, you know, obviously we'll have the call here starting with Joey Mack at 5:30 from the McHale Center. And then the action as the voice of the Ducks. But that's an ESPN proper game. And then 7 o'clock on the Deuce, you've got Gonzaga BYU as the Bulldogs looking to remain unbeaten in the WCC. So, appreciate everybody hanging, and with your borderline insane suggestions, I don't know that we would make it through the shows without them. Have yourselves a magnificent weekend. Thanks for listening to Crunch Time and Sports Talk on 95.3 The Score.